Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, War Eagle, and welcome back to another episode of Second Takes Podcast on the VSporto Network, War Eagle Sports Radio. My good buddy Ben is back co-hosting with me again.
Hi.
Ben, where have we been?
I've been starting a new job and then trying to regain my voice because I lost it due to, I don't know, let's say shenanigans. And so that's why I've been away for a while. My other show suffered as well, so everybody lost out.
Gotcha. I've been in Atlanta over there doing things I've got to do with my job and my career.
Prepping for the SEC Championship, of course.
Obviously, because, hey, we'll be back again. Auburn Tigers playing somebody. I don't know. But that's lots of things we're going to talk about today. We'll get into the Cube, and we'll get into, talk about SEC Media Days, a little event that happened in Hoover, Alabama.
I heard about that.
Between our podcast, we'll probably get into talking about whether we really think that Auburn will be back and talk a little Nick Marshall. That's a big thing. But before we get into all that, again, we're at Second Takes, our Twitter handle, secondtakespodcast@gmail.com if you want to get a hold of us.
Send us stuff.
There you go. And with us today, a good friend we've been trying to get on the podcast for a little while, Ben. Since he's a really, really good friend of yours, and you know him better than I do.
Is that how many reallys we're going with?
That's how many reallys we're going with. And you know him better than I do. Why don't you tell us a little bit about our special guest today?
Okay. Hey. How you doing?
Hey.
That wasn't awkward at all. This is my friend, Mr. Daryl Ashley Martin. We call him Ashley, like the girl. We can call me. I told you I was going to get you excited. All right. But he, like us, longtime Auburn fan. And we were gathering today, planning the new episode, and we said, Ashley, come share your opinion with us. He said, okay. It was that hard.
And that's all we need, right?
That's all we needed.
So, here he is.
Ashley, say hello to the good people.
Hey, guys.
he's very talkative. Just give him a minute.
All right.
I'm warming up.
But it's good to have Ashley with us. We've been trying to get him on here for a little while, and so hopefully he'll bring maybe a different perspective, something different than what you hear maybe me and Ben do all the time.
And we'll get it Auburn fast.
There you go. And Auburn fast. There we go.
Hashtag.
Speaking of Auburn fast, let's move on to the Cube.
Oh, is that? Hold on.
So in the Cube today, you know what? We've had a couple of guys that have said, you know what? We're going to bring our talents and our gifts to Auburn University. And the first I want to talk about is a three-star Florida defensive back, Chris Westry. He is slated to either play safety or cornerback, depending on how well he fits in. How about a 6'4" corner?
Ooh, that's a big corner.
That's a big boy.
I'll take him. I'll let him go there because I don't know. I'm not sure what our needs are at safety or what they will be in the future, but I wouldn't mind seeing a big old corner right now.
Well, some of them project maybe he would come in and project as in the star mode. Yeah. Me personally, and Ellis Johnson, he said, kind of sold him this way that Ellis Johnson likes to have bigger DBs. You can't just use the same, 5'9", 5'10" guy like you used to. Since the wide receivers are getting a little bit bigger, I would like to see Chris Westry at 6'4" on an island with a wide receiver standing at 6'4". That's a big target to throw over.
I'm not gonna lie, I just learned a term. On the island. I've actually never heard that.
Really?
Yeah, really.
On an island? Yeah.
On an island. I don't know. Yeah. Everybody's learning.
Another guy, that the linebacker that we got that has come in, four-star linebacker, Richard McBride, commits to Auburn. Now, he's an outside linebacker, a little bit smaller. I think he's around 6'1", 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
But they're not sure really what they're going to do with him. Again, he may be like a will linebacker. Something like that, maybe even the star position where they can move him around and utilize his skills. He's supposed to be really quick and have really good ball skills, so maybe in a Justin Garrett, Robin Therese kind of type guy in that position there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he'll get as big as Casanova McKenzie or a Chris Frost kind of guy, so he may project. We'll see what happens once everybody gets in, after the first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Both those guys are supposed to come in with the 2015 class. So
I'm already looking forward to 2015. We haven't even started 2014.
Yeah. 19 commitments so far. I mean, so
just for 2015?
Just for 2015.
Yeah.
And football season hadn't even started. But actually,
one really good recruit's already for 2016.
That's true.
Craig Nate.
Craig Nate, yeah, I saw about that the other day. You hear about that one?
Craig Nate, Actually, what have you got on him? I don't know that I have.
I believe he's wide receiver, and he's 6'4", and about 208, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs a 4. Oh, man, what was it?
You have to be specific. People on the internet are going to know.
He's very fast for his height.
Somebody's looking it
he
up.
Fast, actually. Watch his footage. That's all I'll say, and you'll be impressed.
He makes fast people look not fast.
I usually don't believe in looking at just the stats until I see video of it.
Sure.
That's what will make you a believer.
Sure. That's true. Because we always hear it, because, you know, it's great to get those high five-star recruits and whatnot, but I've heard coaches say, you know, you feel like you've got a great recruit until you see a five-star walk out on the field the first day of practice and trip and fall down.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, wow, that's quite an interesting thing there to think of, you know, mm-hmm. in 2016, a wide receiver and a big guy from what you're saying is already looking at the Gus Malzahn offense and saying there's an opportunity for me to come in
and
contribute. It's not uncommon, as we've talked about, Ben, a lot to see linemen, running backs, and those sorts of things. But now we're getting wide receivers that are coming in. So
I think it's you know, one of those the proofs in the pudding in terms of Malzahn's coaching ability and what he can do for the future of Auburn. People are all coming in seeing what he can do with his staff. It's generating a big butterfly effect. If we're already going into 2 years into the future, he's only been here such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
This is his only good things. That's all I can see in the future right now.
Well, we're going to need, I mean, you know, after Sammy Coates is gone, after Duke mm-hmm. Williams is gone, you know, we're going to need another 6'3", 6'4" guy out there. So.
It's hard to replace natural talent, but if you're a good enough program, you'll find it.
Well, it's easy to say. A lot of people think this last year's team was a flash in the pan, but as an Auburn fan and knowing Gus Malzahn, you see that mm-hmm. this is what he can do, and he's in control, and he's going to be in control from here on out. So it's going to be a real deal.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys feel. I never feel like we're not prepared.
Right.
Like the ball may bounce the wrong way, or we may have something that happens, just extenuating circumstance within the game.
Yeah.
You know, weather, or, you know, like I said, the bounce of the ball or a call not go our way. I never feel like, looking at last year's team, regardless of the opponent, that they weren't at least ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just a matter of execution.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's the idea of Auburn fast. You know, we made the joke with the hashtag and whatnot. But, I mean, that there's an idea there. You're constantly having to react and move and react and move. So it makes sense they're going to have those quick reactions to anything that happens, make a change, just write that on a whim. It
sure.
makes sense.
Sure. Well, speaking of Auburn fast and moving forward, let's talk a little bit about, before we get into SEC Media Days, a big topic of SEC Media Days, and that was Nick Marshall.
Yeah.
You know, cited for the small amount of marijuana that he had. Of course, now looking back on this and reading some information and articles that we have, we know the fine has been paid. We're simply waiting on Gus to decide what his punishment's going to be. Was the right decision to hold him out of SEC Media Days? Do you send him there to the firing squad and let him answer questions? What do you guys think?
I would say, I mean, because legally, yeah, it's good, it's closed, it's done, good. I mean, and obviously, there's no one left that hasn't heard what's happened at this point. But for my benefit, it's one of those you don't really see, considering it's so fresh and so raw at that point. No, you don't send him in front of the firing line because Nick Marshall. Unfortunately, you know, I love him as our quarterback. He's not a great public speaker to begin with. So there's no way you can get him prepared to answer the correct questions. And I like how Malzahn handled it. He said, this is a privilege. You're representing your team in front of the nation in a speaking capacity and showing leadership. You are sent there because of your leadership abilities and your ability to represent your team. He lost that privilege.
Right.
Now I know some older players are like, well, it's kind of a drag to have to do this. That may be, but this is still a privilege you've earned.
Right.
So I think that was the right decision to pull him from Media Days just for that occasion, you know, and the others that were there was on and whatnot. I think they did a good job.
I think that's kind of where I fall is, you know, I like Gus when he took the podium and he said, you know, it's a privilege. It's not a right to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a leader on our team. So, you know, he had been a model citizen, you know, and teammate up to that point. I didn't see any harm in it, and I really didn't feel like he was trying to protect Nick as much as he said, you know, just what he said. He said, you know, this is a privilege, and you get to come over here to represent your team, and if your behavior warrants otherwise, you know, you don't get to do that.
What I like to see was the reaction in the locker room, where basically, you know, Marshall apologized to all of them, which he should, and said, you know, this was a mistake. I'm sorry, I let you down. And his teammates went up to him, they forgave him. They told him they loved him, things like that. You know, they are still following his leadership. They brushed out. They realized. They said, "You're human. You seem regretful. We'll still follow you." Right. That's a good sign.
Actually, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he feels remorseful about what he did. Mm-hmm. I read an article about the sheriff that talked to him when he was in the jail, and pretty much, you know, gave him a scolding and said, "You're a role model whether you want to be or not to these kids, and you don't have the right to act like that when you have so many people looking up to you and your own team, and you ought to be ashamed of what you did and all this." And so Marshall was pretty much just, you know, apologizing and broke down and cried. And, you know, from then on, you know, he knew what he did was wrong and shouldn't have done it.
I don't see a repeat of this incident. I really don't.
No. And if, I mean, even if he does, you know, I'm confident Gus Malzahn will do, he's going to do the right thing.
Right. Which, that's another issue entirely, is what is the right thing?
Yeah.
Because by Auburn's rule book, because it's the first offense, he did not get actually arrested, it was just citation. He doesn't have to miss playing time. By rule, he doesn't have to.
Right.
Though, here's the thing, as far, and we were talking about this morning, anything Marshall does, or any punishment Marshall receives, anything Malzahn does, people aren't going to be happy with it. It's either going to be too much or too little.
Right.
I say, yeah, at most, really a half a game. You can put it against Arkansas. Personally, I don't want it to be against Arkansas because I'm going to that game. I don't want to miss Marshall playing. You know, nothing against Johnson. I just want to see Marshall. But it's a very bad situation for Malzahn to be stuck in this close to the start of the season.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, we could pull the Nick Saban thing and give him a 2-game suspension against San Jose State and Louisiana Tech. I mean,
I don't know.
It could let him play.
They're going to be a little tougher than Western Carolina. Who knows?
So, you know, just putting it out there. I mean, it's not, you know, our neighbors across the state have pulled that kind of mess before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, regardless, kind of what you're saying, somebody on one side or the other is going to think it's not enough or it's too much or.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I do so many other things, you know, I just trust Gus in this thing. You know, he's got all the facts, and he's got, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders, whatever. I think whatever he comes down with, it will probably be just about right. Because, you know, I don't think he's going to rush into judgment.
Right.
I'm trying to figure this out. So, SEC Media Days, anything else of interest, anything else kind of pop out there?
Lawson.
That you guys?
Lawson getting injured. Because I didn't know about that.
The ACL surgery.
Right. Yeah. I didn't know about that until he announced. I don't think anybody really knew.
He's pretty much not going to play him. They've pretty much got enough depth. They're going to replace him. I think I read somewhere Montrevious Adams might even move to defensive end.
And he can do it.
And he's healthy now. He was hurt last year, and he still played good.
That's true. He was a beast last year.
He's a 5-star.
Well, you've got a Montrevious Adams that can play a multiple positions. Gabe Bryant has proved over his time there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a senior now. He's played just about everywhere on that defensive line, you know. So Elijah Daniel, don't forget about him. Danzy, you know, he's in there as well. So yeah, we're, you know, I think we're still probably 6-7 guys deep, just like we were last year.
I mean,
and I don't look for anything to change from last year. I think we're gonna play 7-8 guys on the line and running them in and out so that, you know, in the fourth quarter, you know, they're fresh.
They can do whatever they want defensively as long as our secondary doesn't get gashed like it's been.
Right.
That's all I want, just an improved secondary.
Well, but I think you look, I don't know how Ashley feels about this, but I think you look at just another year, and I look at the track record of Ellis Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
His defenses are remarkably better in the second year.
Yeah, I think, you know, they all just got a taste of what could happen with that defense last year, and now you've got people that have seen it and tried it. They're going to be even better at it, and they're going to know how to practice it harder. And
history shows also, just in any big-time game, when an Auburn defense is fired up, they're going to eat you.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a Robinson Therese who played all year. He's coming back. Well, now there's a healthy Justin Garrett to give him a blow.
Yes.
So that the two of them stay fresh going in. I'm excited to see, you know, because Frost and McKenzie have swapped places. I'm excited to see what this defense is going to look like with those two guys having basically swapped places. And then, you know, we've got some pretty talented guys on the back end now, and we're not short anymore.
Right.
You know, we've got guys that are 6 foot, 6 foot one, 6 foot two on the back end, make it a whole lot harder to get over the top. And I think, again, like I said, history shows us, if you look at Ellis Johnson's defenses when he's a defensive coordinator, that second year, they take a big step forward. And I don't, with the talent we've got and the coaches, all the coaches still in place, I don't know why that would change.
One thing I noticed is whenever I've seen Auburn players on defense change roles in the middle of a season, that always scared me to death.
Mm.
And this year when I saw it happened and it worked.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that installed a lot of confidence in me, because you've got players that not only could change positions, but they could understand both roles, and they could do whatever to help out the other position if they had to.
Sure. Right. And to speak to the legacy of Ellis Johnson in general, like, even when things were going bad defensively, I never had any loss of faith in him whatsoever. I knew he was going to find a way to fix it, and faith is rewarded in that situation.
Yeah. And that was another thing, like going back to being prepared, like if Auburn ever had to make any changes after halftime, it was minor changes.
Yeah.
There was no total game plan change. There was just tweaks.
Yeah, it always seemed like Ellis Johnson would come out trying to play, see how we did on playing zone. Mm-hmm. And getting pressure on the quarterback, and it was like once we got to the place where we realized, well, we're getting pressure with four or five guys, we can play man-to-man because we've got the kind of guys that can hang and do that kind of coverage. It seemed like, yeah, you really started to see the defense lock down even more.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then by the end of the season when we're playing, you know, the Georgias and the Alabamas and even Missouri, you just saw, you know, how effective I think that defense can be, even against a team like Missouri. It scored a lot of points,
mm-hmm.
but you know, they, you know, in a way, like playing ourselves. I mean, you spread out, you got so much space to cover,
mm-hmm.
You know, but still, you saw, you know, when we go back to another conventional offense in Florida State, you know, for all but 13 seconds and really probably 3.5 quarters,
right?
You know, Florida State was scratching their head trying to figure out what in the world. To, you know, they're supposed to do.
They were scared. That first half was fun.
So,
oh,
you know, we missed one tackle on a guy that probably should have been stopped with just maybe a couple yards. That would have changed the game. One blown kick coverage, and that was really big.
You do realize Malzahn just recently went back and watched that game.
Yeah,
he's refused to watch it until just a week or so ago. Yeah.
And that's good too. So then. Hang his head.
Yeah.
Oh, he said. Well, he still says he thinks about it all the time, and I understand that he wants to get back there. But at the same time, I guarantee you, as much as it'll haunt him, he's had that happen before when he was a high school coach, losing, you know, first year getting that championship, lose, went back the next year, got it. So I think we'll see something similar.
Well, and I think he's going back to what he did too when he came this year. He said, "I don't care what happened last year. Mm-hmm. This is a whole new year."
Yeah.
He's going to mentally prepare them to. And, say that this year.
And the irony is, though, is here's the deal. We're getting much more love this year from the, you know, analysts and whatnot than we did last year. They love us up front. They love everything offense. Not in Vegas, no. But they're sitting there going, they're still like counting us out. Like, well, they'll still be impressive, but their road schedule, yada yada.
That's when Auburn's at its best.
Yep. Seriously, and that's why I'm sitting there. I'm like, yes, it'll be tough to go and play in Georgia and then go and play in Tuscaloosa. I completely agree. It will be. But that doesn't mean it's, you know, unbeatable.
No.
But I think this goes back to, again, talking about SEC media days. You know, Alabama was picked to play, what, South Carolina, I think, in the SEC championship game,
yeah.
And win it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, we're picked to finish, I think, second or third in the West. I think it was second that I saw. And so, again, you know, they're picking an Alabama team with a whole lot of question marks, overlooking us, really because of the schedule. I mean, that's the only thing I've ever heard anybody hang their hat on was they just really don't think we can do it with the schedule we've got. And, you know, I'm looking at it here. We're going to get into the first three games here just a little bit and talk about them. But, you know, there's probably, as we go through this, a handful of them that, you know, I don't see us favored in. But it doesn't look that much harder. You know, with the exception of going to Georgia and going to Alabama.
Yeah,
but,
just the road games or what.
You know, but it's not like we haven't been to Sanford Stadium and beat Georgia. It's not like we haven't been to Bryant-Denny and come out with a W before.
And
it's not like we haven't played an SEC team before.
Yeah.
the hardest part I can see in those is just it's a hostile crowd. Well, both teams also have non-veteran quarterbacks in the SEC. Now they're going to be more tested by the time they get to us.
Sure.
But that, I mean, like I said, I don't know why people are buying stock in Jacob Coker. If he's really still in a heated quarterback battle with a guy who couldn't get a score against themselves in their spring game, then no. Why are you just assuming he's going to save you and Alabama's going to be favored every one of their games? Let me tell you something now. When Steve Spurrier is cocky about his team, there's a good reason for it. And that's his reason. He has Alabama in their sights. I guarantee you he does. And I'm going to watch that game with a lot of interest because I guarantee you I think they're going to be the spoiler for him.
Well, if his quarterback shows up, I think they can beat Alabama.
Oh, I believe it. If anybody in the East has the ability to beat Alabama, it's them.
Well, that's another interesting thing that came out, I think, of SEC Media Days for me was that, you know, for the first time, I think, in a long time, Nick is going into the fall camp. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know who his quarterback is. And, you know, that for a guy maybe that's not used to doing that, I don't know how that's his situation that is for him. You know, saying, you know, we've still got to get Coker in. We've still got running through fall camp. You know, we've got two or three other guys there, you know, that we've got to take a look. And it's going to, you know, we think we, you know, I think most people would say we think we know who's going to be the quarterback. But, you know, they've still got to hash that out. And here we are, you know, as Auburn fans, for the first time since Brandon Cox, knowing exactly who our quarterback's going to be.
It is the first time since Brandon Cox, isn't it?
Brandon Cox was the last quarterback to start back-to-back seasons at Auburn. And so since Brandon Cox, we know who our quarterback is. And this is uncharted territory.
My, how far we
have
come.
Especially for Gus, because this is the first time he's got a quarterback that's in the same system 2 years in a row. Nobody knows what his offense looks like. Mm. With a returning quarterback.
Nope. Right.
And I think that's another reason that everybody kind of has pause is what is the offense, as dangerous as the offense was last year, and this kind of brings us into our new our next topic, how much more dangerous, what are our expectations out of this offense with a returning quarterback and really still loaded at a lot of the skill positions and on the offensive line. So I'll let you guys kind of open it up, and what are you looking for? What do you see as fall camp is going to start, I think, Friday? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think going into this with so many returning pieces? What's this offense look like?
I mean, if I've said it once, I've said it a million times, it's new and improved weapons. We took what we had. We MacGyvered an offense, I'll be honest with you, because we had a lot of unproven talent. We took something that you didn't think could work and made it work, and not only just worked, it worked incredibly and unbelievably. Well, now we've got perfectly precision-made military-level weaponry that we can use. And I see more dissection. There's a reason people, in spite of our schedule, still love us up front and still love the offense, because they will dissect, they will destroy. We can throw now, we can run whenever we need to. We are loaded. We're ready to go. And we're going to pull the trigger on everybody that comes near our yard.
One thing I thought about is when the whole thing with Marshall getting a citation, I thought if I was the running back or one of the running backs on the team and that was, you know, spotlight was on Marshall, that would probably a lot of feel under me to step up and be a leader. And I'm going to push harder to do my role better than what they're expecting him to do. So I'm looking on there thinking, you know, all this talks about Nick Marshall, people are forgetting about Corey Grant, mm-hmm. Cameron Artis Payne, mm-hmm. Thomas The Rock.
The Rock.
Peyton Barber. You've got those four guys that are incredible already and so dynamic and diverse, everything. It doesn't matter. I mean, and we've got Jeremy Johnson, for crying out loud.
Jeremy Johnson with Duke Williams, I think, would be a great team up.
Well, Duke Williams, Sammy Coates, and Benson will be returning. He was really good until he got hurt at LSU.
True.
So, I mean, you've got those guys. You've got a quarterback, maybe two quarterbacks that can run and pass. Mm-hmm. We're going to see. I do want to see Jeremy Johnson do some running.
And I think that's where I think we improve vastly, because as I think we still run the same. I mean, I'm still looking for 250 to 300 yards on the ground.
Average.
Well, I'm looking for us to lead the nation in rushing again.
Yes.
But I think in combination with that, where we saw Nick Marshall, where we saw Jeremy Johnson just miss on a few passes another year into the system, mm-hmm. I think we hit those passes. I was watching an ESPNU. They were replaying the Texas A&M game. And I saw how many passes in that game that Nick was so close to hitting. And I think this year he hits those passes.
Oh, yeah.
So then all of a sudden the games where we were having to hold on and the games we were having to outscore folks, those become 17-point victories, 21-point right. victories, because we get them so far behind that I think you're going to find a lot of offenses in the SEC this year that won't be able to keep up at that pace. You know, if we're averaging 41 to 45 points a game, that's a lot of points per game. That's a lot of yardage.
See, and I'm okay with not having as many legendary finishes this season because, quite frankly, I don't think my heart can take it. I'm okay with us being like, well, here we are. We dominated. Yes.
Yeah, but that also helps your legacy and helps your team get noticed because
true.
There's those teams that, you know, yeah, you outscored somebody 50 to nothing, but nobody cares because you just did it all the time.
Right, but we're not playing, you know, Division II school down the street in Alabama, but we are, you know, we're playing tough teams. If we can dominate those tough teams on that road schedule, that I think that should speak volumes in general because that's just dominating the schedule.
Yeah, you're talking about our favorite Division II school, St. Mary's School.
St. Mary's was
St.
Mary's.
Death of the blind.
It's Notre Dame's hardest opponent all year, according to him.
That's right.
I did see a percentage of Nick Marshall's throwing average, and last year he finished at like 56%,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, not that good. And they said now he's already up in the high 70s.
Even if you get like, you know, think of that in the passes that he missed, if he just improved to, I don't know, 62 to 65%,
yeah.
Y'all, that's a lot of passes.
See, and here's the thing, because Malzahn, we all know, he's the quarterback whisperer. And if he's doing that with Marshall, if he's doing that with Johnson, though, who's, I guarantee you, he is a more competent passer than Marshall. I'm going to say, like, as far as natural talent goes, I would say yes, he is. But think about that, because he's whispering, he's grooming Johnson in the background. So, again, that's why I'm not super worried if Marshall has to sit out a game or half a game, whatever. But you have to consider this, too, because Malzahn's already saying that Jeremy Johnson, he could play for any top school in the nation and will make it in the pros.
Yeah.
He's already saying that. He's had... what, one, two collegiate games he's had, starts, whatever? Yeah. So, yeah, if he's already saying that about him, we barely even see anything from him, there's a lot of reason to get excited about him.
But regardless of who's the quarterback, and actually, I've asked Ben this, I'm going to ask you since you're here.
Today.
Regardless of who the quarterback is, one of the questions in one of our previous podcasts that I posted to Ben was, if you're a defensive coordinator coming into this, how do you defend it? Sammy Coates and Duke Williams are your two big guys on the outside, and you've got any collection of, as you've already said, Jalen Denson's in there,
mm-hmm.
Marcus Davis, Ricardo Lewis,
mm-hmm.
You know, you've got those guys to use as your weapons on the inside as well, and then, of course, you know the stable of running backs, and you know who we've got at quarterback. You know the offensive line's going to be all right. You know, no questions there. As a defensive coordinator, what poison do you pick?
Well, pretty much every coordinator that's been asked that has said, if I knew, I would have done it.
Right.
So, I mean, you've got to look at
ask Gary Pinkel.
A team that led the nation in running, guaranteed to improve their passing game this year. You know, you've got to have that defensive line that can't break. They've got to do man-to-man. They can't double-team because when they do, they're going to leave that gap open for someone else.
They have to be just as fast.
They've got to be fast. They've got to cut corner. They're going to have to cut corners and hope they don't get caught. Just mm-hmm.
Is it the less mile solution of having that invisible 12th guy?
Pretty much
there to cover somebody. Well, because you know, I know. Like I said, Ben and I looked at this a little bit in detail one of the earlier podcasts, and we said, you know, just from a wide receiver standpoint, if you roll a safety one way or the other, you've got to leave. You've got to leave Duke Williams or Sammy Coates open,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, we're not still some question marks around Duke Williams. We saw what he did in the spring game, but we know if you roll toward him, we already know what Sammy Coates will do.
Right,
Sammy Coates will blow by some of the fastest guys at cornerback and safety on the field,
mm-hmm.
and was wide open. I mean, had him by two or three steps.
And I feel like when they catch the ball, they turn running back and they'll knock people down to get those few extra yards. They don't try to run out of bounds. They'll take the hit and see if they can break through.
That was one thing I saw too. Yeah, commitment to the play.
And then what do you do if? And then again, just from a passing standpoint, because we know about the running game. You know, if you do roll both safeties to blanket those guys, well, then you've got a guy like Jalen Denson, 6'3", 6'4". Oh, and don't forget the guy who dropped out of the spaceship, Melvin Ray, in the middle of the championship game. Here's
yeah.
another 6'3" guy coming over the middle. That's a nightmare scenario for a linebacker.
And if you learned Elva in the championship game, don't discount Uzama either.
Yeah. And we ain't even got into tight ends yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just talking about wide receivers.
Well, yeah. A lot of this is being based on if Auburn can stay healthy, which, I mean, they've got depth, but you still want to keep those main guys healthy.
Sure. And that's what I'm basing it on. Yeah. If you've got all the A-list players, I mean, you know, number ones are going. and you've got everybody out there, it's just a nightmare scenario. You don't have enough guys.
You have to wonder if one coach is if you're talking about people being healthy, you have to wonder if there's going to be that one coach who does some little targeting, because that's the only way he can think to win.
Well, yeah, there's always going to be that. One of the other times I saw real pressure come where I was like real nervous is when Auburn was committed to a pass play and that quarterback got rushed and he just kind of got shook up. But,
right.
Other than that, I couldn't see anything that ever was like troubling.
And I'll tell you another, there's one coach I could think of that would do some targeting, and that's it's Bielema. I fully believe he would do it. He's the kind of guy that I think would do a little
sneaky. I think he'd rather sit back and cry about it later.
True. Well, he's not breaking bread with Mal Zombie. He's not throwing it at him either. So thanks for being a neighbor. Good grief, Bielema.
Let's just make sure we send him that swinging game footage this year.
There you go. So that'll make sure we get
it. And then the only glitch is going to be like the girl from the ring just popping out of him.
Yeah. Well, let's, since we were talking about Arkansas, let's move on and break down our first quarter of the season. We'll talk about Arkansas, San Jose State, and Kansas State. Auburn opens, as most everybody knows, at 3 o'clock on this month?
This month? Not officially August yet.
Depending on when you're listening to this.
I know you're excited, man.
August the 30th. The future. We open at home against Arkansas.
SEC
speaking
Network.
Of old Brett Bielema and the Hogs come to town.
Sweet.
Ben, I'm going to start with you, and we'll just kind of make our way around. Give us your thoughts on the game, and I don't know what you think will happen.
Well, and there's two variables here that I see in this game. One is Marshall going to play. I mean, we beat that horse to death, but it's still a variable because we don't know as of this podcast recording. We don't know.
Right.
Now again, like I said, I'm going to be at that game, so I'm going to be watching incredibly anxiously. So let's say here's the two scenarios, like worst case scenario I see happening. One, Marshall doesn't play. He misses, I'm going to say, the first half of the game. So we get Johnson. He's going to have a little bit of, I think, because he never started in an SEC game, let alone an opener.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say he's going to get a little jittery, but he'll be okay. The other thing I think happening is that I don't see it possible for Arkansas to be any worse than last year. They have to improve. They have to. I'm not going to say drastically, but they have to. So it's just interesting to see, because now it's a home crowd, so they're going against a hostile environment. I still say we take them by 2-3 touchdowns, but I will think there will be a bit more of a challenge than last year to it, just depending on what scenarios play out. But I still think we come away with the win.
So you're calling W?
Oh, yeah.
By 21, maybe?
Yeah, by 21, maybe. We'll go conservative and say 14 just because we don't know what full scenario. Worst case scenario is what I'm going to say is by 14.
All right. Ashley?
I'm going to say Auburn 48, Arkansas 14.
Wow.
Woo.
I think they'll get two impressive touchdowns, and then after that our defense will say, no more.
Wow.
And I think I'll say Cameron Artis Payne and Corey Grant both get a touchdown apiece, and the rest will be Marshall through there.
Ooh.
I think he won't run for one touchdown that game to prove a point.
Maybe if they're in the red zone, he might run it in.
I say not even then. I think he's going to stick to his guns and try and get his percentage up pretty early.
Okay. Wants to show what he can do.
Yep. I think every game he'll do something different.
I look forward to that one now. Okay. I like that prediction.
There you go.
I'm going to give the defense a touchdown. I'll say that.
There you go. All right. So you're calling a pick six, huh?
Yeah. Three easy pick six. Through the middle.
If this all comes true, we're going to Vegas for the next game.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to be too far off of you guys. I'm going to change your score a little bit. I'm going to say 42 to 10.
Wow.
And this is why I say this. I think they get 10 late. I think it's over at halftime. I think Gus comes out firing on all cylinders. I don't think Nick Marshall plays, but I think Jeremy Johnson, who has proven already that he can come in and be ready to go, comes in, and we don't see as much zone read from those guys, but we see more of that veer option. We see more of the middle line run that we saw when Cam was running the offense with the big body getting yardage up the middle. Mm-hmm. And then I see a lot of Corey Grant around the middle, Ricardo Lewis on speed sweeps. I see a whole lot of Cameron Artis Payne and Jeremy Johnson getting some good yardage up in the middle of that beat up defensive line. And then I see lots of touchdowns. I see several touchdowns through the air. And I'm almost like you. Somewhere in there, somebody picks it off. I don't know if it's a pick six, but I think out of desperation at some point, just to try to get something fired up, Brett tries to throw one, and we're ready, and somebody on the back end picks it off.
What year is Therese? Is he a junior this year?
Therese should be a junior.
Yeah, that's also
a junior. I didn't even really recognize him until last year, and about the first of the season. I mean, he was just on
fire.
Well,
he and Justin Garrett both got kind of lost in the shuffle because they were when we were trying to do the 4-3 defense.
Right.
And they really didn't fit anywhere. And so when Ellis Johnson come in, I remember this being a big article that I was reading was people like Justin Garrett and Therese, who really didn't fit into the mold of your conventional linebackers, but they really weren't quite cornerback guys. This safety star position really is.
I knew Garrett was kind of set for that.
Really is like their their kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, and as we've obviously seen, Justin Garrett last spring before he got injured was just lights out, and then Robinson Therese just all through the season.
Yes.
So it's obvious they kind of found a home, and it works really well. So I think somewhere in there, like I said, somebody intercepts it. I don't know if they get a pick six or not, but I think if Arkansas gets any points, maybe a touchdown or that field goal in the first half, but I think maybe they get the other. Later on, maybe against the twos or whatever, once we've tapped the brakes and, game's pretty well decided.
Second string show signs of cracking.
Yeah, and really more from just lack of focus than anything else, It's not that our twos aren't as good as our ones. It's somebody loses a little bit of focus for a minute.
I don't think they'll be cocky or anything like that.
No. I'm just, games in hand, as we've seen football teams do before, games in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody will lose focus for a play or two, and then all of a sudden you've given up a touchdown or a field goal that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
I think it could easily be, I'll go this far, it could easily be with the talent differential and the coaching differential and just schematics, it could easily be a shutout.
Hmm. I think it's that
big a gap, because we're already opening in Vegas a 21 or 24 point, depending on whether Marshall plays or not.
Just for that game.
Mm-hmm. So I'm saying it could easily be blowout. I mean, it could easily be a blowout and a shutout by the defense. So that's just what I
think. I'd say if we're in shutout territory, I'd say they still get maybe a field goal.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is just some sort of lapse somewhere. Mm-hmm. Late in the game, somewhere somebody not as focused as they should be
mm-hmm.
winds up giving up something they shouldn't. The next game on September the 6th, again at home, San Jose State comes all the way across the country.
62-3.
To play at 6 o'clock. There may not be a whole lot of breakdown on this one, but Ben.
62-3. I've seen this game before. I mean,
this.
We've all seen this game. You can change San Jose State, Ball State, whoever you want to put in there. It's 62-3.
Western Carolina,
whoever Saint you want to put in there. Sweet Mary, Sister Lou, Cindy's School for the Deaf, Blind, and Dumb. Members of the movie Tommy. 62-3. That's it.
I think if it's going to be like that, you need to expect to see. Peyton Barber and Rock Thomas start getting warmed up.
Mm.
And a lot of Jerry Johnson.
Yeah, if you're going to break in anybody, get all your talent on the same comfort level, mm-hmm. you might as well start breaking them out early.
Yeah.
Well, and I think if my predictions on the Arkansas State, an Arkansas game opener holds true, then yeah, I think Nick Marshall's back for this one after halftime. He's, shoulder pads off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you give him some rest.
And Jeremy Johnson and the rest of the second and third teamers are,
trading places. Game three is a wee bit harder.
And I think that's, there's 12 days before they go to the next game, so there's a lot of rest in there. But still, I think if you can play a team like San Jose State and you've got it in hand at halftime, you take your starters out and say, hey guys, take your shoulder pads off, put your ball caps on.
Yeah.
And we'll get this one the rest of the way. And again, this could be something that's could give up 3 points, could give up 10 points, but it could just as easily be a defensive shutout. And
you'll see that whoever the new Tracy Wilson is going and finding out what the latest version of Cammy Cam Juice is.
Yeah.
That's how that's gonna work.
So I'm gonna go kind of a weird score on this one, and I'm gonna say 55-3.
That is a weird score.
Kind of a weird looking score there.
That could happen. Though.
Somehow we wind up 55-3, I think.
As long as we never, ever, ever see a baseball score again, I'm okay.
And the reason I don't go in the 60s like Ben did is I think Gus is smart enough that, like I said, if it's well in hand by even midway through the third quarter, we start tapping the brakes and we're going to hand the ball off a whole lot.
Right. Control that clock.
Yeah, and you know, and you're gonna see a lot of that how Gus will do from time to time when he needs to bleed out a clock when everybody's up at the line and they're standing there for like 13 seconds. You know.
And here's the irony though. You want to see a contrast during this game? Fans are going to leave probably around third, fourth quarter if the score gets up that high. But guess what? Our coaches are going to yell at people for leaving the game early.
Probably so. And they should.
Well, going back to the controlling the clock. I think a lot of people don't realize is when an offense is controlling the ball, they're giving their defense time to rest,
mm-hmm.
to get back in there and try what they need to try to be better at the game.
Right. Now, this may be a game where you see Ellis Johnson use a lot of weird looks and defenses.
That's the perfect time to do it.
Yeah. You know, when we're up four touchdowns, you know, and we're going, what are we blitzing for in that situation?
Yeah.
Because practice will only get you so far, but a true game, that's where you can get the most learning and see what your team's worth.
Yeah. Well, he might still be trying to swap players around or for a certain team, who's going to be a better matchup against,
We're looking at going. Why is he playing there? And what are we doing? Yeah. And it's just Ellis Johnson and the guys going. Well, yeah, let's shake it up a little bit. Try some guys at different places and.
Yeah.
You know, let's stretch everybody just a little bit. See what we got.
I like that too. That he's wanting to get to that point where he can say, "All right, I need you two to swap. That's your role." And they say, "All right, I'm here." They don't have to question it or be confused on. Well, I'm not sure what my role is. You know, they are. They all know it.
Right. I like it.
Well, and to wrap up our look ahead to the season, difficult game Thursday night, 6:30. Probably, you know, I don't know if it's going to be on the SEC. I think it's on four-letter network, right? ESPN.
It might as well be on ESPN. Usually that's what they do on Thursday night games.
Yeah, it's a Thursday night game at Kansas State. Bill Snyder, that bunch up there. Thursday night games are tricky and. Enough as they are, Ben, what about this Thursday night?
Now, here's the thing, because I don't know as much about them as I do other, you know, actual SEC teams. But say, my belief is, because everyone talks about how tricky they are at home, that means I see them as Tennessee last year, a completely different team at home. They're getting on the road, we're not going to hear much about them. But at home, they're going to be a much bigger force, because, you know, Tennessee beat Georgia last year at home, and they're a different team. But then people assume that there were people that were whispering, like, well, maybe Tennessee, they're going to be the ones that finally take Auburn off their little pedestal or whatever. And, you know, I've still got that picture of Malzahn, you know, like looking like the Hulk in the Avengers with that giant monster coming out. I was like, that's my secret. I'm always on upset alert. There's a big Tennessee T on top of that thing. Then that's the way I see it is they're going to be like that. They are going to be tougher at home and on Thursday night because it is different and it's a new travel. But I think it'll be a closer game than against Arkansas, but I still think we'll win. And I think we'll still show that we are for real. No, obviously there's no way in Hades that Malzahn's going to take them lightly, obviously. But I don't think it's going to be as, because people are going to be like, oh, this is the game that's going to show Auburn's not all they're built up to be. I disagree completely. I think this will show what they are made of entirely. This will be the real deal. This may get some, as I've said before, some ESPN analysts out of Saban's butthole.
Does it change your perspective any at all that the purple beat the white 17-13 in their spring game last year? Their offense ranked 35th in points per game at 33.2. Their defense gave up 22.9 points per game and was ranked 27th.
How many SEC teams did they play?
Yeah.
That's the real question.
Not many. And before us,
was it Kentucky?
And before us, they have. and before we play them, they have Iowa State, which is a Big 12 conference game.
And I think that's when we'll get to really know what they're like is against Iowa State because Iowa. I mean, granted, they're not that tough either.
Sure.
But we'll see what their level of playing is against a team like that. I don't know. I'm going to try before that game to try and catch some kind of game film just to get an idea. But I'm still going to hold to my judgment of they're like Tennessee. They can be good, but they're not that good.
Gotcha.
Well, going back to the LSU game too, like I wasn't ever worried about an Auburn game, even during the LSU game, you know, even though we lost. But
I don't know what you're talking about.
Given the weather conditions, Auburn would have had that game in control if it wasn't for the weather.
Yeah.
I mean, as much slip as they had. But even though they were behind, they kept pushing and pushing, and they were on the process of catching up to gain the lead.
In the second half, yeah, they were completely different there. The first half, I don't say it was just so much just the rain, but also Hill, I'll give him credit where credit's due. Just run
well, it was just crazy because we would run one direction and we'd fall. He'd run one direction and he'd outrun everybody.
Yeah.
That was just that crazy.
That was crazy. And you know, I think because he got drafted, didn't he? I think so. Jeremy Hill?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so he's gone.
Yeah.
So funny, just side story, did you hear what happened to Mettenberger?
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, and again, this is nothing against him. He was in a bar, and I want to say it was Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a Bama fan comes up to him, and what did he say to him exactly? That's the thing I can't remember.
Roll Tide.
He said something. And then, he said Roll Tide to him, and Mettenberger just looked at him and said, good luck with that.
And he turned around, and his friend punched him.
He sucker punched, sucker punched Mettenberger, and the bar owner's like, yeah, Mettenberger didn't do anything to this guy. But, you know, stay classy, Alabama, is the moral of that story. Idiots.
Okay, anyway. So in answer to Simeon's questions, here's the losses that they had, which may say more than their wins. I don't know.
Right.
North Dakota State, they lost 24-21.
Texas
beat them 31-21.
Texas beat them in their fun little year.
Oklahoma State beat them 33-29. Baylor beat them 35-25.
Uh-huh.
And then they lost to Oklahoma 41-31.
Now, of course, we should keep in mind Baylor was running up the score on people that year too.
Right. So that may tell you a little bit. They finished 8-5, 5-4 in the Big 12. They did not play an SEC team all last year. So I don't know. You know, that may change your thoughts a little bit there. I'm looking for a lot of Auburn. I know it's a tricky game. I know we got to go to Kansas State Thursday night, and bad things have happened to teams in the top 10 going places on Thursday night. I haven't seen a whole lot out of this Kansas State team. You know, Bill Snyder usually does a really good job, and I look for him to be decent.
Yeah.
Maybe another 8-5 season, you know, a 9-4. I just don't think we're one of those W's. I don't think it's like the first two games, and this is really a slap at Arkansas, because I don't think it's that kind of game, but I can easily see it being a 42-21, you know, or a 42-17 kind of game where, again, we're scoring a lot of touchdowns and they run down the field periodically throughout the game and it'll get a field goal or a touchdown, but they're never within shouting distance. I mean, from the word go, we're up 7-10 points on them,
mm-hmm.
and they're always playing catch up, and it's never, like I said, you know, they're never really within shouting distance of us. I mean, we just, you know, because I just think by that point, three games into the season, you know, we saw the improvements last year, and we're returning that level and maybe even better.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think by Kansas State, everything's really kind of settling in and being in place. And, you know, that may be really where we begin to hit the afterburners. And
so what do you think the score will be?
Well, like I said, I think it's a 42-21, 42-17. You know, like I said, in all intent and purpose, it's over at halftime. But, you know, periodically, they'll run down and kick a field goal. They'll run down and get a touchdown. Again, like I said, because somebody misses an assignment or somebody's not as focused as they need to be. And, you know, we just wind up giving up 17 points.
See, that the way I'm looking at it, though, is I'm seeing kind of similar. I'm thinking 35-17.
Right.
I say kind of like actually what you said about Arkansas, a couple touchdowns early on, but then holding to maybe just a field goal in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm seeing it. Not scoring as much since it's road game, things like that.
Right.
But I want to say roughly 35-17.
Well, you know, and it's the first road game that year, so, you know, I'm kind of like you.
It's a unique road game.
Yeah, it's a Thursday night, not a Saturday. You know, but I just, you know, some people have really called it a trap game, and,
Yeah.
And some people are really concerned about it. And I've done as much homework, I think, as I can possibly do until fall camp opens on Kansas State. You know, I know they've got a quarterback that's transferred now. The spring game didn't look all that impressive. You know, 17-14. I just, again, unless there's a lot of changes in fall camp and those first couple of weeks, I'll be watching, you know, Kansas State those first couple of weeks to see what they got.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'll see. I don't know that I'll see a team that can hang. You know, if Gus puts his, you know, foot down and we're going as fast as we can, I don't know. I don't see a Kansas State team that's going to, I mean, because the teams that they lost to are teams that like to go fast, that like to spread it out. Those are the teams that they lost to last year.
Yeah.
I look for us to come out of all three of those games with 3-0 going to Louisiana Tech that we'll talk about next time.
La Tech.
Yeah. The next three that we'll talk about, Louisiana Tech, LSU, and Mississippi State next time, may get into some more interesting conversation. But, yeah, those first three games we should easily be 3-0.
LSU will be our Rocky II.
Come out of there. So, anyway, guys, I think that'll about do us for today. Ben, anything on the horizon for you?
Let's see. On my end of the stick, let's see. I posted that just last night, night before, in the past, for anyone else who's listening. Newest episode of my show, Unimportant Radio. Got with an old friend, did an episode. It's fun. We even had a missing persons report to go through while we were doing it. So give that a listen.
Nice.
Other than that, just life in general. Life is peachy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're hoping not to have quite as big a lull as we did this last time. Ashley, anything just random you want to plug?
I'm just really excited about football.
I like to football.
He's like the rest of us. He's like the rest of us. He's got the countdown clock ready to go and waiting on kickoff.
It's like those kids up at 2 a.m. on Christmas Eve, just like, is it Christmas yet?
It's getting harder and harder to follow recruits like I do because there's just so many this year.
There really are.
Absolutely.
And you've got to still remember, well, you've got all that talent from last year, too.
Literally. Yeah. Oh, there was one thing you forgot to mention.
Hey.
Hall of Fame inductions.
Yes, yes. Very important. Auburn is the first SEC team and school to have a Hall of Famer in the three major sports, baseball, basketball, and football. Of course, we know about, you know, the football inductees, when most everybody knows about the basketball, with Frank Thomas going in today into the Hall of Fame. That completes the trifecta of the three major sports, and we are the first SEC school to do that. So,
your next WNBA. I'm trying to think, because I don't think hockey's going to happen. Just got to throw that out there.
I don't know that I even have a response. So, guys, again, thank you for joining us. Thank you to War Eagle Sports Radio, VSporto Network. Thank you for all the great people that make all that happen. Thank you to our special guest, Ashley Martin. Thank you to my regular guest and co-host, Ben Weaver. Again, this is Chris Roberts. And whenever you're listening to this and whenever we talk to you again, until that time, War Eagle.
War Eagle.
Coach over here. What does it take to stop that offense? It doesn't look like there's a way to.
Well, everybody has problems with it. You know what? I'm the wrong person to ask.